Odyssey celebrates Halloween, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Us don't know what's going on, and B, a lot of us don't know what's going on. I'm talking about the fact that the computer systems in Luzerne County, they were attacked. It was a cyber attack, and I was sitting there going, who can we talk to kind of like go through the basics, and then it hit me. And we first had this guy on the show during this past election cycle, and he mentioned a lot of cybersecurity stuff, and he said, if you ever want to have me back on, I thought, you know, this would be a great time. And while things didn't go his way a few weeks ago, I'm so happy you're here now because you are an expert in cybersecurity. You're the assistant teaching professor of information science and technology. Is that correct? It's Mark Friedenberg.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. You there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, cool. Are you at Penn State?
That's right. Yeah, University Park.
Okay, cool. Now, you are a cybersecurity expert.
That's right.
And how closely are you following what's happened in Luzerne County?
I'm reading what's in the papers, and I think there's probably a lot that the county officials don't know yet, and there's probably some information that they're not able to share, but we have the... I think the broad strokes of the story are that a county employee got an email with a file attachment, double-clicked it, opened it, and that basically gave the bad guys access to the computer network, and it spread to multiple agencies or departments within the county government. And that's really the scary thing. You know, it seems like this may have been timed that the initial, what we might call sort of the penetration into the network, could have happened some weeks ago. And it was timed to, they call it detonate, or to, you know, take information out or disable systems during the Memorial Day holiday weekend, when it would be a little bit harder to defend against and take efforts to remediate against it. And that included the election board was impacted by it. And yeah. So if you think about, well, the elections board was impacted over Memorial Day weekend, maybe no big deal, but it could have been timed to be impacted during the election, and that's really the nightmare scenario.
Two things. Number one, someone, I can't mention the name, but I had a discussion with someone who's working in and around this and said, just off the record, you didn't hear it from me, but like this was a lot more intricate and a lot more detailed than people really know. It's really affected day-to-day business. It probably because, as you're explaining it, I didn't know what the Memorial Day aspect of it, the fact that they timed it to go off. That's who does this stuff generally? Is it just kids sitting there, like the stereotype of kids just creating chaos, or is it the Russians, or who's doing this, and what is their purpose? Chaos, or is it to steal information to use it against us?
You know, I can't speculate for this particular case, but certainly Russia, North Korea, Iran. These are countries that have certainly the capability and that have taken advantage of timing of, there have been attacks over, you know, 4th of July weekend, for example, or the holiday, because it's harder for us to respond to it. And the goal might be to disrupt systems. The goal might be to kind of case the joint. Maybe they case it on Memorial Day 2019 and prepares them for November 2020. Of course, I'm just speculating.
Sure.
It could be to take information out. It could be all kinds of things. And the unfortunate reality is that all the technical measures in the world, we can put those in place, and the county, it sounds like they had great systems. They had apparently a system in place where if you would get an email from somebody who doesn't work for the county, there would be a little reminder, you know, don't open up, don't click links, don't open the attachments. But somebody did it anyway. And yeah. Humans, they're always the weakest link in these kinds of things. Not that they're weak, but it's the weakest link.
The human element.
Type of social engineering, yep, takes advantage of people's inherent trust in each other. And that is, more often than not, the way that these attacks start, is you trick somebody, you lie to them.
In situations like this, and I don't know how, I mean, I don't expect, like, I don't know, an accurate statistic, but do the companies sometimes blame the person who opened the email when this stuff happens, or they usually just go, I mean, it could have happened to anyone?
I don't know if they, you know, kind of throw them under the bus or anything. In a technical sense, I suppose it is the employee's fault, but it can happen to anybody. You know, just within Penn State, this public information, I mean, they do tests. They'll send kind of fake emails like this to employees and staff and students to see who clicks on them. And the data that come back are really eye-opening, you know, for faculty, it was over 50%, sort of fell for this fake attempted attack email. It's a tricky technical problem and perhaps an unsolvable human problem.
Now, what can people do on an everyday basis here? Like, so people are listening, they have their smartphones, they have their home computers, their laptops, their tablets, whatever it is they have. What can they do? Is it as simple as just don't open emails, or are there different things that you say, like, here are three things you should avoid and you should be okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. Certain opening emails, fine, but you got to be careful this clicking on links or opening attachments. Especially if you get like a Microsoft Word attachment or an Excel file or a PowerPoint, those can very easily, and certainly like an EXT file, a program that would run on a Windows computer.
That's EXT, stands for extension, correct?
EXT, executable file.
Executable, yeah. Sorry.
And, that could do anything. And it could even be, it kind of can burrow underground for a period of time, or you may not even notice that it's happening. So be extremely cautious with opening attachments. It's much, much safer to use something like Google Docs or Microsoft Office Online, where you're going to a website, you're not downloading a file that you're going to run on your computer. So that's really, really important for email. That's one of the best things that you can do to protect your, what we call your security hygiene. Another one is to make sure that you're using different and strong passwords for every different kind of service that you're using. A lot of people probably have Gmail, for example. You want to make sure that you're using a different password for your Gmail, your Google account, than you are for Facebook or than you are for your bank. And it's easy to say that, and people probably know that that's a good idea. It's harder, though, to try to keep track of all those passwords. There are tools called password managers that you can use that will generate strong passwords for you that are long and filled with random characters. And that's really important because if somebody get your password for Facebook, that means now they can go log into your Google account. And then for a lot of people, if you live your life in Gmail like I do, then it's kind of game over.
Yeah. I always wonder when it comes to like Facebook, like, well, why would they want to target me? I mean, is it just because I'm an access point to other people?
It could be. It also could be that these attacks can be pretty indiscriminate. You can send them out at scale. And, you know, as the defenders, as the good guys, we need to be perfect 100% of the time. And the bad guys only need to succeed one time. So they might attack you. They might attack me. It could even be not really targeted in any kind of human-specific way. It just goes out to everybody. And that is, that's a concern, because if you can get into, say, within the county, if you can get access to the network through one employee, then you can get in and you can start to move department to department. And that's really the problem. And the other thing I want to make sure I mention is what's called two-factor verification or two-step verification. This is critical as well. Even if the bad guys get your password, if you have two-factor authentication or verification, where you may have seen like where a bank will text you a code to your phone,
yeah,
that's okay. It's actually pretty easy to get access to somebody's text messages. It's much more secure to use an app on your phone. It is, unfortunately. Yeah, you could call up. Well, I don't want to give advice, but trick Verizon into resetting. Send all of Jason's texts to me from now on, that sort of thing. If I know some information about you that's probably not all that hard to find, like your last four of your social or your mother's maiden name, that's a big vulnerability. That's a business and people problem too, not a technical one. So it's better to use apps like Google Authenticator or Duo Mobile that run on your phone. And that way, even if the bad guy has your password, unless he's also got your phone, and if he's on the other side of the world, he probably doesn't, you're still going to be safe.
Yeah, and you said those security password managers, the ones where it pops up. I just recently saw these and started using them at first. I was like, no, I'll never remember that. But then I realized it saves it with my login, so it generates this like 25-digit code. Those are safe at this point.
There's some well-known brands. LastPass is one. I use one called 1Password. Find a reputable one. But, yeah, they're very, very secure. And it's even more convenient. Like, if you have your phone, if you have a fingerprint sensor or face recognition or anything like that, you can unlock your phone with that, and it puts in the password for you automatically, and you go about your business. Nothing to remember, nothing to forget, and nothing for the bad
sure.
guys.
I have a tip I want to throw to you. I don't know if you ever heard this one. I don't think I came up with this, but I started using it. It's super helpful because the question they always ask is, what's your mother's maiden name? And I figured that could be something someone could easily find out. Okay. So my thought was this. So I go through they sometimes will give you a list of questions, like 25 questions. Here's my tip. Pick a random question and have a random answer that you use as your go-to answer. So, you know, where was the first, I don't know, what is your favorite meal? And your answer could be Florida. It doesn't make any sense. Nobody could possibly guess that. But that's your answer. It's just about matching. So you basically take a question, give a nonsensical answer that you know, like you always answer with that, gets you into things, and it helps you, you know, avoid. It's like coming up with like a weird, quirky password. Does that make any sense to you?
It does. I mean, it's a great idea. I do that too. I do it in a slightly different way. Rather than using Florida as the answer,
why don't you use Florida either?
Or you know, some other one single answer that you would remember. I just pick a random word or something I see around the room, and then I write that down in my password manager, what the question is, and then the answer. And that way, somebody could easily find my mother's maiden name, but it's not going to do them any good if it's a random word instead.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'll tell you something. I know I'm not the only person. I'm not sure how old of a guy you are, but I think I got a few years on you.
35.
Okay, I got 10 years on you. So here's where it got tricky for most people with passwords. I was fine with passwords. I had one or two good passwords I used, maybe even up to five at one point. It got tricky when the first company said, you need a capital letter. Oh my God, you have no idea how that changed everything. I once spent a good 2 hours trying to get into an Apple account. Couldn't figure it out. As it turns out, it was my regular password with a capital letter. And then they started saying symbols. Whew. It wasn't like for years. But I feel like I'm secure, but I have to change some passwords. Now I'm freaking out a little bit here.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that there are, for computers, it's very, very easy to try, you know, basically trillions of combinations of letters, punctuation, and numbers to figure out the password. And the larger the possible space is, we would say, the key space by including a symbol or uppercase letter, yeah. And certainly by not just using the minimum, like if there's a site that lets you use a character password, that's probably not a great site, but use 25, use 50, use 100 characters if you can.
Wow.
Your password manager is going to type it in, not you. It's much, much more secure. It gets to like the age of the universe in terms of how long it would take a supercomputer even to crack it when your key is that big, when your password's that big.
Do you have one final tip here, and I let you get back to colleging? No. Working. Somebody texted in. They said, you can't avoid opening attachments. Sorry. Like, say, a court report from a provider, an agency in service. Is it as simple as if you see an attachment, unless you specifically know the person, or, you know, if you don't know the person, don't open it? And even if it's from it looks like it's from like AOL or Discover Card or whatever, you make sure the email address looks legit?
I mean, it's better to not. I mean, I understand that in some cases you may need to do it. I think it's really good if you had a shared folder or something like on Dropbox, Box, or Google Drive, something like that. That's even better. But yes, you know, the internet was built in the 60s and 70s by a bunch of idealistic nerds who weren't really thinking about cybersecurity and what our use of the internet would look like in 2019 and 2020. And so security, authentication, identity was not built into it at any point. And email especially, it used to be extremely easy. I could send an email from president@whitehouse.gov. I mean, we did that as an exercise in class. It was very, very easy to do. Now it's a little bit harder to fake the spoof email addresses, but not impossible.
Man.
So yes, looking at the email address very, very closely is better than nothing. But I did have one last tip. Which is, I'm very worried about people using public Wi-Fi networks. If you go to a coffee shop or a store that offers Wi-Fi, if it's the kind that you don't have to put in a password at all, you can basically think of that as everything that you type, you're going to be shouting that so that everyone in the store, anyone who's nearby, could see what you're typing in, including potentially passwords. So you really don't want to use those kinds of public Wi-Fi networks. It's much better to use your cellular connection because your phone, it's not just when you're actively using it. I mean, your phone is sending and receiving email and doing all kinds of things, even if it's locked and asleep in your pocket. You got to be really, really careful with those public Wi-Fi networks. I think that's a big vulnerability we still face.
The world is coming to an end. No, it's scary.
We can fix it, but yeah.
Somebody said, where do you get password managers? Can you give the names of those that you mentioned?
Yes. LastPass is one. I think it's lastpass.com. I use one called 1Password. It's the number one and then the word password.
Was the first one last, L-A-S-T?
Correct. Yeah,
LastPass. And the other one's OnePassword.
There's a number of others too, and they're all better than you have, you know, using the same password certainly, or you know, putting them on sticky notes on your monitor. That's kind of like the cliche of really bad security. Any password manager is better than that.
Yeah. Does the person online too have a question? Is that John Lucas? Does the person have a question, or do they want to just chime in? I know you probably have to.
I'm sorry. I couldn't quite hear it, but somebody has a question, you said?
I think, but I'm not sure. It just says cybersecurity. I don't know specifically what they want to say. So before I go to them, because I'm up against a break here as well. This is really interesting, by the way. It's Mark Friedenberg. You work for Penn State University. You're assistant teaching professor, correct?
That's right.
For like IT and such. And is it? Oh, okay.
And a lawyer, too, and I haven't talked about that angle yet.
Oh, my God, you're a lawyer. Jeez.
And the cyber insurance, I'm glad the county had it. That's going to help them a lot to pay for some of the efforts they're going to need to fix everything.
Do you have a second for a question?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got to keep this a little quick because I'm like really late for a break here. But Nate in Honesdale, what was your quick question?
Hey, guys. I was just wondering about purchasing security software on PCs. And wondering if that was exactly necessary, because I know there's software that you can purchase with a yearly subscription, and then I've seen free software, and was wondering if one is better than the other and whether or not it's necessary.
So free software versus going out and buying one, or subscription-based versus, I guess, hard copies. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about? Listen to his answer off the air, because I got to wrap this segment up. Nate, thank you for the phone call. Mark, what is your thought on that?
Yeah, I think for Windows in particular, what you've got built in is probably pretty good. Some of the popular software, like Kaspersky is a brand that people might have heard of, they actually may be linked to the Russian government in ways that we don't fully understand. I think Windows has really advanced over the past maybe 5-10 years. The built-in security software is pretty good. If you follow some of the best practices we've been talking about, turn on the firewall, use the tools that are built into Windows, I think that's probably a pretty good start.
Cool. Listen, we'll have to have you on again. This is super informative. I'm getting a ton of messages here. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. Again, it's Mark Friedenberg, cybersecurity expert. You work at Penn State University, your assistant teaching professor, also a lawyer. How about that? And your challenge, everyone, find his mother's maiden name. Ready, set, go. No, I'm kidding. hey, thanks for taking the time. We'll talk again.
Okay, thanks so much.
Appreciate it, Mark.
Odyssey celebrates Halloween, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.